like I should say welcome back. All right, that's hour two open music. I know. Whoops. Now everybody's going to think we're not live.
I know what you could do to fix that.
What?
You could take a picture of yourself and put it on Twitter with a big sign pointing to your face that said, me, preferably shirtless, wearing underwear only.
7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. This is Molloy's show, and somebody decided to start with hour two music tonight, but that's all right. This is hour one, and it is sponsored by Irish Dave. He has a message. The new Spielberg flick, Saving Paul Ryan's Privatization. LOL, Irish Dave. I would have said something different, but that's all right. Saving Paul Ryan's Privatization. LOL, Irish Dave. Thanks, Irish Dave. Appreciate it, man. Thank you very, 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 very much. All right. Not much, but a little bit of focus on a story here. David in Los Angeles writes, Dear Mike, shocking, repulsive, vulgar, criminal, impeachable. Words describing George W. Bush's illegal war that has cost the lives of more than 4,000 American troops, 5 of them today, and 500,000 Iraqi civilians? No. Words describing Anthony Weiner's obsession with his own attributes. Isn't America great? I think anyone who attended Anthony Weiner's press conference, was that today, demonstrated with their attendance that they are to journalism as termites are to a solid, stable house. I cannot believe that the swine who showed up at that press conference, I'm not defending Weiner, I'll get to that in a second. But the swine who should, did you hear the question hollered out, were you fully erect? Yeah, that was on network television. Were you fully erect? Are you going to support Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child? I mean, this is the American press corps who should be clamoring for indictments against the war criminal. No, what am I talking about? The Anthony Weiner thing proves a couple of things. First of all, that he is a very ignorant man. To think that anything that is posted on Twitter or Facebook or even just the plain old internet, that somehow that's not going to go everywhere. How could you be this stupid, Anthony? How could you be this stupid? I thought Weiner was a good congressman, except for his position on Israel. He is a Zionist where it concerns Israel. And for that, what can I say? He's in the U.S. Congress. He's in deep, plentiful company. But looking beyond that, his other positions were so right on the money where it concerns what now passes for liberalism. Now, don't send me emails and tell me, you know, this and that. And his grandfather served on the board of Goldman Sachs. Yeah, you know, okay. Nobody in the Congress right now is what a real left liberal would like to see there. No, not even Dennis Kucinich. So Weiner proved two things, that he is abysmally ignorant. And I think he makes the point, and I'm not going to watch how I say things tonight. I mean, you know, you can play off these words as much as you want to. Makes a point. I get it. He makes the point, I think, for anyone who is deciding, and it's 98% of the people making these decisions are males, that they're going to use the internet to sneak around the way they used to sneak around in porn shops, and before that, the way they used to sneak around in the so-called red light districts of the town or the city. This is ridiculous. For Christ's sake, the whole thing. Weiner, you are a moron. A moron! And as far as you're not going to resign, oh, yes, you are. Yes, you are. You are toast, pal. You really, really are. You're gone. And I think another thing it proves, or makes a point, in the case of Anthony Weiner, if you go after a right-wing, neo-fascist Supreme Court justice, like Uncle Clarence Thomas, and you have a trail of this high schoolish, semi, it's not even porn, it's more like eroticism floating around, you're toast. Because the bottom feeder of all bottom feeders, the underwear sniffer himself, Andrew Breitbart, will sniff around until he gets the scent, to which he is deeply familiar with. Yep, underwear. Yep. Let me see. Andrew Breitbart is an underwear sniffer. And if you are going to take on a Supreme Court justice who cannot defend himself, nor can his old lady defend herself, they are guilty as charged. The only way to take you down is to call out the underwear sniffer. Here he comes. Come here, boy. Come on, Breitbart. Come here, come here, come here, come here. Good boy, good boy. Now, sniff, sniff. Good boy. Now, go find it, go find it. Woo, 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 woo. Goddamn freak, Breitbart. The underwear sniffer without which this filthy press corps that we have would have nothing to do on a dull Monday when the whole goddamn world is exploding. The Syrians are shooting Palestinians. The Israelis are shooting Palestinians. And the press corps says, were you fully erect when they took the picture? Woof. Come on, Breitbart. Go, boy, go, boy. This guy took on Uncle Clarence Thomas and his old lady and told the truth. Get him. Leave it to Andrew Breitbart. What a sleazebag. You ever notice how all the sleazebags are on the right? I mean, the ones that are really sleazy, they're all on the right. Can you imagine somebody at Think Progress or Daily Coast or someplace like that sniffing underpants the way Andrew Breitbart or Matt Drudge or the rest of these scum do all the time? Man. Which is not to exonerate Weiner. Weiner, you're a dumbass. Is it the arrogance that comes with being, six years, I guess, three-term member of Congress, Chuck Schumer's boy, going to run for mayor in New York? Is it the arrogance? You're married to a babe, Weiner. What's the matter? You gotta troll on the internet, you poor miserable bastard. Are you kidding me? You're married to a woman who obviously is three times smarter than you and goddamn better looking. And you're gonna troll the internet. Oh my goodness. All right, let's take a break. Breitbart, come here, come here. Come here, Breitbart. Find these underpants, boy.
Shirt, sexy boy shirt, so sexy it hurts. And I'm too sexy for Milan, too sexy for Milan, New York and Japan. I'm too sexy for your party, too sexy for your party. The way I'm disco dancing. Turn on the catwalk, yeah, on the catwalk.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. And very quickly on the Palin thing, did you see that bit about some of her dogs ran to Wikipedia and tried to alter the Paul Revere's Midnight Ride to make it sound as though this psycho lunatic was right? I mean, what a bunch of sick bastards these Palinites are. Do you want to be led by a sociopath like Sarah Palin? Well, Sarah Palin has as much chance of being president as I do, so that's all I'm going to say about her. What are these crazy people? Kawai John sends me an email last Friday. Thanks for your defense of teachers. My dad was a teacher. He worked 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. When his department was threatened with spending cuts, he took an early retirement so the young guy who had joined 3 years previously could stay on. It was a severe financial hit for my dad, but he, quote, had enough, end quote, and was more interested in doing the right thing than getting a few more retirement points. Funny thing, though, after he retired, his services were in even greater demand. He had been a respected member of the community for 30 years, and people knew that they could get an honest day's work from him, and they respected his opinion on difficult subjects. Of course, he never collected on Social Security because he died from a heart attack. So all those compromises and delayed compensation that he negotiated were lost. So your caller needs to figure out how to pull his head out of his, you know, my dad sacrificed for jerks like him, and to have your caller turn on him like that is an insult to my dad's memory. Kawai John. That caller, was that the one talking about, he started out by saying, you know, he started to bust up on teachers, and I just screamed at him and hung up. I don't have very much tolerance for jackasses. I really don't. Whether the name's Sarah Palin or Anthony Weiner, Jesus God. From David in St. Paul, Minnesota, who listens on KTNF. Mike, let's not forget the clowns like Michelle Bachmann, Jim DeMint, etc., and other Republican candidates who consult with God. They then tell us whether God tells them whether they should seek higher office so they can screw the people over. I know several professors slash teachers. They get paid 9 months of work over a 12-month calendar year, or they get all the money for the 9 months with no income for the other three. This is not just an attack on public union employees. I'm a union registered nurse who works in the private sector. We had 12,000 Twin Cities RNs who went on strike about a year ago. We were attacked in the same way that teachers and public employees are being attacked today. If people think that they aren't next, after they have wiped out the union workforce, they have a very unpleasant awakening coming. Thanks, Mike. And Kathy. David. Doo-doo. Emails that have stacked up. Hey, Mike, you have several new listeners here in Southern California. This is from Elise. Being one of your most enthusiastic fans, I constantly tell people about your truly wonderful show. I'm losing my health insurance, which I get through my employer in July. I also have a birthday in July. I'll be 61. So my options are keep working where I do and hope I don't need a doctor for 4 years, or look for other employment and hope they'll A, hire someone my age, and B, offer health insurance. Good luck to me. Buying it yourself is pretty expensive. I wouldn't be able to afford the premiums. The schmuck I work for just doesn't want to pay his part of our insurance anymore. It's cutting into his handsome profits too much. As I write this, he's jetting back from a 2-week trip to France and Germany. In addition, he has contempt for us who work for him. The only reason I stayed at this job was the insurance. And to make my life total perfection, my nitwit of a conservative Palin-loving brother is coming in from New Jersey Sunday to visit his daughter, who lives about 8 miles from me. Oh, joy. Oh, rapture. He tells me I'm a bleeding heart liberal because I'm immature. At 61? He's a typical mean-spirited Republican who only ever talks about taxes and the lazy people who don't want to work and don't deserve help from the government. Never mind, he married his current wife because he couldn't live on his Social Security payments, and she owns her own house. Did you hear Sarah's stupid statement du jour? She thinks Paul Revere went galumphing off into the township on his horse, ringing bells and shooting his gun to warn the British he was armed for freedom, or some dumbass thing like that. She not only wouldn't qualify for the TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? She probably wouldn't even do well on a show called Are You As Smart As a Cheerio? Your show and a daily martini, my wonderful boyfriend, and two sweet rescue dogs are the only things that between me and the booby hatch, I think. Thanks for being there. Please stay there. Regards to Kathy and a hug to Molly, too. Elise. We'll be right back.
Any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder.
Get your news unfiltered.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Irish Dave. In his message, the new Spielberg flick, Saving Paul Ryan's Privatization. LOL, Irish Dave. Just a little bit more here on Sarah Palin. I can't resist. While visiting Thomas Jefferson's historic home, Monticello, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin today paid tribute to the nation's third president, telling an audience of supporters, quote, "We must never forget the wisdom of Jefferson and his wife, Wheezy." Governor Palin said that at a time of our history when American people needed leadership, it was Jefferson who said the immortal words, "We're moving on up." The former Alaska governor, criticized in recent days over her grasp of American history, used the Monticello speech to demonstrate her knowledge of the country's founding fathers. "Let us have the ingenuity of Benjamin Franklin, who invented the electric chair," she said. "Let us have the honesty of George Washington, who told his father that he chopped down a cherry tree because it was blocking his view of Russia," she added. "And let us have Washington's perseverance, which he demonstrated during that harsh winter at Sweet Valley High." But she saved her most fulsome praise for her favorite American hero, Paul Revere. In his famous cry, "One if by land, two if by sea," Paul Revere proved that you don't have to know how to count higher than two to be a great American. At the end of her speech in Monticello, Governor Palin said that she was looking forward to the next stop on her bus tour, Philadelphia, the home of the Taco Bell. Andy Borowitz, the Borowitz Report. You can get it online before you hear it here. What a maroon. What a complete maroon, this woman. Oh, my God. And to think that people take it seriously. Ow! Well, enough fun and frivolity. Time to get to the depressing open a vein portion of the program. Unemployment is now worse than during a Great Depression, huh? Alternate.org has this up. We knew it was bad, but the latest U.S. unemployment report released Friday proves that we are in the worst slump since the 30s. here's a way to put all that in perspective, all these numbers. About 6.2 million Americans, 45% of all unemployed workers in this country, have been jobless for more than 6 months, a higher percentage than during the Great Depression. Here's another problem. More than 1 million of the long-term unemployed have run out of unemployment benefits, leaving them without the money to get new training, buy new clothes, or even get to job interviews. The New Republic has published a piece comparing the onset of the Great Depression to the political circumstances we face right now. According to the New Republic, quote, there was no economic reason that the government could not have spent on this scale in 1931 as opposed to 1941. The obstacles were political. Then, as now, politicians in Washington were obsessed with the budget deficit. They never would have countenanced such spending apart from the threat to the nation posed by Hitler and the Axis powers. The New Deal deficit spending helped boost the economy and bring the unemployment rate down to single-digit levels. But fear of deficits limited the scale of New Deal programs and caused Roosevelt to reverse course and cut back on spending in 1937, just as the economy was gaining momentum. Unfortunately, the country seems destined to follow the same course in the current slump as it did in the 30s. The May jobs report should have provided the sort of stiff kick that is needed to revive discussion of additional stimulus. Instead, it seems to have barely shaken Washington's ongoing obsession with deficits. We really are in for a continuing economic mess here, and again, I realize that my solution may be totally simplistic, but I would think that with the stroke of his pen, the president could dip into whatever contingency funds are available, and if none are available, come up with a plan, go on television and tell Americans, all right, this is my plan to put 10 million people back to work, and then lay it out. Infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure. And with some member of this half-assed press corps asked, how are you going to pay for it? Were you fully erect when you took the picture? Jesus. How are you going to pay for it? You don't have to pay for it. It'll pay for itself. Make the commitment. Tell the Fed to start printing money. Pay private private contractors to begin the work, set aside 20% for graft and fraud, because that's what will happen. And the first thing you know it, 1 million people are back to work, and then 2 million, and then 4 million, and then 7 million, and then 9 million, and then 10 million, and then we have full employment, and all of a sudden the tax revenue starts to, the coffers start to fill up, and all of a sudden the budget deficit starts to come down, and then all of a sudden, wonder of wonders, the national debt starts to come down, and then when you finally have a grasp on it, and the American public is grateful as hell for what you've done, Mr. President, then you tell the world that you are proposing a 25% surtax on anybody who makes over $500,000 a year for the duration. What's the duration? Until the budget deficit, if one still exists, or the national debt, if one still exists, starts to reverse itself the way they did, the way it was doing when Bill Clinton handed everything over to the Bush crime family. Very simple. There you go. I just solved it all, and I'm just a 25-cent talk show host. Oh, my. Oh, my. Do you get the feeling that the Christian God is just furious with certain people in this country. 600 people in southwestern Iowa were ordered to leave their homes yesterday. Missouri River breached a levee across the border in Missouri. People are evacuating. Flooding is just relentless. And in Arizona, now it's Arizona. First it was Texas. It was burned to the ground. Now Arizona. A 225-square-mile fire that has grown into the third largest in Arizona's history is covering the state. The smoke is blowing into Colorado and New Mexico. The fire has burned more than 27,000 acres. On Saturday, the very freakish and weird governor of that state, Jan Brewer, took an aerial tour and called the fire horrific, adding that the fire was, quote, the likes of a fire of which I have never experienced from the air, end quote. If you can decipher that sentence, I'll give you a free Mike Malloy Show podcast. A spokesman for the fire management team said 1,300 firefighters were working, including some from Oregon as all the way to New York. So I just wonder, usually when there's some kind of a catastrophe someplace outside the so-called heartland and people die and horrible things happen, the Christian fundamentalist preachers start beating their Bibles until the Bibles start to bleed and screaming about the gays and the liberals and the secularists and the people trying to keep God and prayer out of the public schools and that God has dropped his veil of protection. Where are you now, you phony sons of bitches? Why are you preachers? Why are you not screaming about how God has dropped his veil of protection over this racist administration in Arizona, and consequently the people have to suffer? And what about Iowa? Is that where they have the Iowa straw polls, the caucuses or whatever, that determines who these piggish Republicans are going to send into the fray for the presidency? You people better listen up, because I think your God, you invented him, you know what he's capable of. He can slaughter thousands with just the stroke of his finger. You better pay attention.
Is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Irish Dave, who wants you to see a new Steven Spielberg flick, Saving Paul Ryan's Privatization. LOL, Irish Dave. Thanks, Irish. Thanks, Dave. From Bob. Thoughts from another Bob. Hey, Mike, a thought on the Republican nominee for 2012. I believe it will be Michelle Bachmann. The Wall Street money wants the moron puppet Romney again, but no way. One word, pick one. Mormon or moron? Even Tweety, Chris Matthews, said on the Leno program that Romney gives empty suits a bad name. Yeah, I don't believe he said it either. Palin, total phony. somebody once said about a lie, someone once said that the thing about a lie is that you have to not only remember the lie, but who you told it to. Her handlers just ain't that good, and she likes being famous. Bachman is the real deal. She actually believes idiotic crap, she says. She does. You can't trip her up. Also look at the early states, and look at her base. Not just the dumbest people in America, but some of the dumbest people on earth. How can she not get the nomination? Well, anyway, Mike, make a note. On this date, June 2011, this is my prediction. Take care and keep it lit, Bob. Michelle Bachman? No, see, here's the thing. Regardless of how the crack political press constantly urinates all over its brogans, no matter how stupid they sound, no matter how pointless is their coverage of pointless events, whether it is Michelle Bachman or Sarah Palin or Anthony Weiner, Twitter, whatever, regardless of all that, the press doesn't like somebody that disses them. And Sarah Palin has been dissing the press since the McCain days. Plus, the political press in this country understands that she's a half-wit, that she's a moron. And at some point, they will rise to their First Amendment duties and protect the nation from this nonsense. And not just Palin, but Bachman, too. I mean, both of them. Just like they started in on funny hair, Trump. Of course, it was Obama that deep-sixed him. But, well, he actually deep-sixed himself with all this. Well, I don't know. Where's he born? But the political press, television, I think some of these people on television will have the most fun with Palin and Bachman and their ilk. The nominee, I'm sorry to disagree with you, Bob, but the nominee is, in my opinion, is going to be Romney. Mitten the kitten. Romney will be the one. It's all about illusion. It's not about leadership in this country anymore. It's about the illusion of leadership. Exhibit A, Barack Obama. It's about, and they're not going to go with a moron again like George W. Bush, because I really don't think that they can pull the same hat trick a second time. The only reason Bush was back the first time was so that the uber wealthy in this country could rip off every goddamn last dime they could get their hands on. Well, they've done it now. There's nothing left to steal. Oh, they can invent all kinds of financial devices and try to steal it again, but they got everything off the table in two swoops. The SNL scandals under Republican administration back in the 80s, and then this horrendous, horrendous banking scandal in the first decade of 2000. 21st century. Come on, Mike. So they're not going to look for a moron like George W. Bush and a murderous son of a bitch like Dick Cheney that they can throw out there to cause wars and distractions and all kinds of things while they steal America blind. America's already blind. And they can't steal our seeing eye dog or our tin cup. So what's left to do? Elect Mitt Romney, who's a half-wit, but he looks, you know, he looks good. He really does. He looks good until he tries to look like he's common folk. He takes off his coat and rolls up his sleeves like, ooh, I'm really impressed. Of course, not just Romney. I mean, Barack Obama does that, too. They all do, don't they? I'm going to roll up my sleeves here on my $700 white shirt, but let me roll up my sleeves so I'll look, you know, working man. Sure. So I think it's going to be Romney. I really do. Capitalism wants as many wars as it can possibly get, but it doesn't want nuclear wars. Because in nuclear wars, even the capitalists die. Slowly. And so do their kids. So, no, Palin and Bachman and Herman Cain, the godfather of baloney, Herman Cain. Oh, my God. they're here for comic relief. God knows this country needs a good belly laugh. Wiener kind of gave it to us, but then he got all serious on us about, oh, well, I've sent out all kinds of tweets to women. Ooh, I really apologize for hurting my wife. And, oh, sit down and shut up. I mean, if you are so stupid, Anthony, as to take on a Supreme Court justice and his old lady, even though the facts are on your side, after you had tweeted pictures of your groin, and you don't expect a underpants sniffer like Breitbart to find you out? Oh, my. We talked about the underpants sniffer, Andrew Breitbart. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by Kauai John, as in Hawaii. Kauai. K-A-U-A-I. How do you pronounce it? Kauai? Kauai John. He's sponsoring the hour. He sent me to Eldrine Guerrero's ukulele album, Sweet 409. I played it for you. When was it? Last week? Week before? It's a phenomenal album. And I like it. And Kauai John saw Eldrine Guerrero live on Kauai, and he still gets all emotional when he thinks about it, apparently. Kind of like seeing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young in Oakland. Sweet 409 is on iTunes. Get it now, he writes. Or go crazy thinking about John Bonham. He's got Bonner here, but I think he means John Bonham, doesn't he? Go to ukuleleunderground.com. Ukuleleunderground.com. That's quite a message from Kauai John. Thank you, John. He's our sponsor this hour. From Jamie in Baltimore. Hey, Mike, if someone wants to troll the internet half or fully naked looking for a date or hookup, that's their business. It's pretty stupid, in my opinion, but whatever. My question to the married and otherwise partnered trollers like Wiener and the other recently caught married representative from New York State is, why did you get married? My guess is neither of these guys has an open marriage, and it is pure arrogance on their part that they think they won't get caught. Really? Like you said, how dumb are these people? Still, wouldn't it be ab-fab to see the Republicans greet Anthony Weiner with a standing ovation like they did with the married Republican senator from Louisiana, David Vitter, after Vitter admitted to paying hookers for sex and to put diapers on him and spank him? They gave him a standing ovation. Hey, isn't paying for sex anywhere in this country outside of Nevada a crime? Wow, those GOP family values. Jamie in Baltimore. Yeah, I mean, this whole thing about Weiner, for Christ's sake, it's been on television all day, on cable, on MSNBC. It's still on MSNBC. It's been on CNN. It's been blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God. Let me see another one here. These are emails, not me. I want to get these on. Mark in Fort Worth. Hey, Mike, what Weiner did was stupid, but last time I checked, sending lewd photos on Twitter isn't illegal. By contrast, prostitute patron David Vitter's actions were illegal. And what's more, a big part of Vitter's platform to this day is family values. As usual, smug, hypocritical Republicans get a free pass, while Democrats are crucified if they do anything wrong, even if relatively trivial. Well, that's true. That's true. That's very true. But that's one of the reasons people like Anthony Weiner should know better. I mean, come on, Anthony, for Christ's sake. I mean, sending a picture of your underwear. As soon as that picture hits the World Wide Web, the radar in Andrew Breitbart's nose is going to go off. The underwear sniffer is going to catch word of that. My God. I mean, just almost immediately. And once the underwear snifter gets the scent of something like Andrew Breitbart does, it becomes his sole purpose for being alive. Scum sucker. What else we got tonight? One of the most promising recent trends, Brad Friedman would know more about this than I, but it was a Times editorial, I think today. One of the most promising recent trends in expanding political participation has been allowing people to vote in the weeks before Election Day, right? The early voting. That allows people to skip the long lines and vote at more convenient times. To have voting on one day, the first Tuesday of whatever, or is asinine. It's stupid. But there's a reason for that. There's a reason for it. Anyway, this early voting thing has become increasingly popular over the last 15 years. And as the Times points out, it skyrocketed to a third of the vote in 2008 was early voting. We did that last year, didn't we? Huh? And that number has been rising, particularly in the South, among people who supported Barack Obama, white and black voters. And that, of course, is why Republican lawmakers in the South are trying desperately to end it or cut it back. Two states down here. Yes, sir. I'm in the South. They've already reduced early voting periods, and lawmakers in other states are considering doing it, reducing it, too. It is the latest element of a well-coordinated effort by Republican state legislators across the country to stop these goddamn people from going to vote. Anytime the voting is unrestricted and everyone gets a chance who's legally eligible, that means a citizen and over a certain age, and that's it, Democrats always win. Whether that's good or bad is immaterial. Democrats always win. Now, the biggest part of the effort to cut back on this early voting, and we have it here in Georgia, is... One of the requirements is that voters have a government ID. You know, this is where Neil Bortz, this other right wing pig who operates out of Atlanta, and I think he's on 200 radio stations. He has one theme for the past 40 years. Negroes are stupid and lazy. And I shouldn't be taxed for anything. Those are his two themes. But he also rails against government schools. He's been calling them government schools, Bortz has, since I started in this business. Neil and I worked at the same radio station a couple of times. Go figure. This is back during the time when they had the fairness doctrine. When they had to have more than one point of view on a radio station, right? Anyway, he always refers to public schools as government schools. And yet, he thought the idea of a government ID was a very good idea. Because Neil Bortz is a racist. Of the worst kind. He pretends like he is concerned about his dusky brethren. But he is not. He is a typical Texas, now Georgia, racist. And you know, he thinks government IDs are a great idea. Keep those people from committing voter fraud. What voter fraud here in Georgia, Neil? What voter fraud? It's all over. Where? Well, this will stop it. Stop what? So anyway, a government ID has been painted as a response to voter fraud, which is essentially a non-existent problem. There is no voter fraud. There is election fraud. But that's what Republicans do. And as usual, Republicans try to cover up their criminal activity by accusing other people of doing the same goddamn thing. This is a typical Republican ploy. And the point man for that across the South is Neil Bortz, who will tell you that, you know, these black people, when they're not driving around in their Cadillacs, they'll try to vote 7, 12, 50 times. That's why we need voter ID. We do.
Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's come through a hole in the air from those nets in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and
welcome
day.
Back, or something, 21 past the hour. All right. Trying to suppress voting, which is what Republicans have always done. Anytime there is no restrictions in voting. Now, I'm talking about national elections. I'm not talking about local districts that have been gerrymandered to the point where you're lucky to find Democrats in some of these districts. But on a national level, anytime a Democrat or and a Republican are running, on a national level, the Democrats will win. Well, then how do Republicans get elected? I hear you say. Election fraud. You can't have it both ways. You can't have the majority of the or people just stay home and don't vote. You can't have the majority of people saying they favor the policies of the Democratic Party, sometimes by a margin as much as 15 or 20 point percentage points, and then over Republican scumbag policies, and then have Republicans win elections without election fraud. I mean, come on. Anybody who was asleep at the wheel in 2000, when the most blatant form of election fraud occurred in forever in this country, it was like what they do in countries that are just beginning to pretend like maybe they perhaps could think about democracy, and you have some dictator, and usually it's an African country, some dictator who says, okay, let's have free elections, and they have free elections, and the wrong guy wins. So what does the dictator do? He says, sorry, the vote counting machines weren't working right. Here's the real result. 96% of the people voted for me. Or like what happened in the occupied territories in Israel-Palestine. The Bush crime family pushed for elections. Why? I don't know. Probably just a trap. In Gaza, and free elections were held, and oh no, the wrong winner won. Hamas. Well, we can't have that. So election fraud is a real thing. Voter fraud doesn't exist. But election fraud, yes. And people like this scum-sucking Neil Bortz, big-time talk show host based here in the Atlanta area, he knows this. He knows there's no such thing as voter fraud. He knows there is such a thing as election fraud. Neil was not on the planet Mars on December 12th, 2000, when the United States Supreme Court said, no more vote counting. If you continue to count, it will damage plaintiff. Who is plaintiff? George W. Bush. Bortz knows this, but, you know, Bortz has a lot to protect. His millions, his attitude, and his two topics. Negroes are terrible people, and he's taxed too much. Obama, for example, won North Carolina by less than 15,000 votes. And the state, that state has had early voting since 2000. In 2008, more ballots were cast before Election Day than on Election Day. And Obama won those early votes by a comfortable margin. So it's no coincidence that the North Carolina House passed a measure along party lines that would cut the early voting period by a week, reducing it to a week and a half before the election. One can hope that the governor there, Beverly Perdue, a Democrat, who recently, by executive order, ordered, what was it, Kathy, 47,000 people who had lost their unemployment insurance to go ahead and get it anyway. You gotta like this woman. Now, Republicans said cutting the early voting period would save money. That is a filthy lie. It's just a lie. The North Carolina Elections Board and many county boards said it would actually cost more money because then they would have to open more voting sites and have less flexibility where it concerned staff members if it was all crammed into one day. And black lawmakers in that state, they call it what it is. Modern Jim Crow. Stop the Negroes from voting! And those dumbass white people, the poor ones, the rich ones. All right, all right, all right. And Georgia, which is where I live. Yeah. One of the biggest jumps in black voting percentages was here in Georgia. And over the objection of several black lawmakers, the Republican-dominated legislature passed a bill about a month ago that would cut back in-person early voting to 21 days from 45 days. Florida just cut its early voting period to 8 days from 14. You see, they want to stop Democrats from voting. Now, how do you do that? Run a candidate that the Democrats would say, oh, you know, I really like that person. Or do you commit election fraud? Well, if you're a Republican, that's no choice. Of course you commit election fraud.
your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Kawai John. He's a sponsor. And I want to remind you, he asked me to remind you, that he sent me a CD, and I played it last week. Aldrin Guerrero, Ukulele. The title is Suite 409. And I like it. I wouldn't have played it if I didn't like it. Matter of fact, I think we played it twice, didn't we? I think we did. Kawai John saw Aldrin Guerrero live on Kawai, and he still gets all emotional when he thinks about it, kind of like seeing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young in Oakland. What the hell does that mean? I saw him in Atlanta one time. They blew me away. Anyway, Suite 409 is on iTunes. Get it now or go crazy thinking about John Bonham. Go to ukuleleunderground.com. UkuleleUnderground.com. Thank you, Kawai John, for the sponsorship. Well, guess who has officially entered the race for the Republican nomination for president? Rick Santorum. Yes, indeed. What a field. You have Sarah Palin, of course she's in. You have Michelle Bachmann, of course she is. You have the Godfather's Pizza Man, who, I don't know. I sometimes think that Herman Cain is stupider than Michelle Bachmann. He was on one of my old alma maters, my radio station I used to work for before they went totally right wing here, WSB in Atlanta, same station Neil Bortz now works for. Has, well, Bortz has worked for WSB for, I don't know. He never gets fired because he does exactly what corporate America tells him to. Herman Cain is the same way. Herman Cain made a decision a long time ago that as the CEO of Godfather's Pizza, he was going to do more than just smell like pepperoni and black olives. That's not a joke. That's just, you know. So he decided to become president of these United States. He's never held elective office, but he has been a radio talk show host. Herman Cain. Sounds like a TV character, doesn't it? Oh, my God. Now we have Rick Santorum. And I like this sentence, the New York Times. Exasperation crept into Rick Santorum's voice when he was asked the other day how he planned to win the Republican nomination for president after having lost his last election as senator from Pennsylvania by more than 17 points. Yeah, how are you going to do that, Rick? Now, this is the guy who, I don't know, he's got, what, 7, 8, 9, 12, 14 children. He's just got a whole bunch of them. And that's because he's a very devout Catholic, and devout Catholics are not allowed to use any kind of birth control. Catholics of the devoutness of Rick Santorum, of course. Anyway, rather than discuss his strategy when he was asked that question, he critiqued the question. This is what he said. Had I not run for re-election in 2006, you wouldn't ask me that. What? The question was, since you lost the last election by more than 17 points, how are you going to become president? And his answer, had I not run for re-election in 2006, you wouldn't ask me that. What does that mean? What does that mean? And then if that wasn't bad enough, he added that some candidates did not run for re-election because they would have lost. And yet no one asked them about it. He said, look at Mitt Romney. He served for one term as governor of Massachusetts and didn't run for re-election. Why? Jesus, God. I don't know. Now, Rick Santorum must have hated his father. That happens in a lot of Catholic families, especially immigrant families. You know, because the immigrant comes to this country, and I know because my grandfather came from Italy, too. But this is Rick Santorum's father. Now, my grandfather didn't have any control over me or never even tried. But Rick Santorum's father apparently was just a pretty strict father. Here's why. Santorum announced his candidacy at a picturesque county courthouse in Somerset, Pennsylvania. Now, that's near where his grandfather, okay, it was his grandfather, who immigrated from fascist Italy, first worked in a coal mines. And the backdrop is supposed to have, you know, to visually reinforce his message that hardworking people came to this country to seek freedom and opportunity. Now, the reason I say he must have hated his grandfather, because Rick Santorum is a fascist. By definition, he is a fascist. A Christo-fascist. And the last thing Rick Santorum would ever do in his tawdry little life is vote for anything that would help working class Americans, especially somebody who works in a coal mine? Are you kidding me? Ha ha! Ha ha! Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, Tim Pawlenty, Ron Paul, Gary Johnson, Mitt Romney, and now Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum, who said, had I not run for re-election in 2006, you wouldn't ask me that. The question is, how do you expect to win anything when you got your ass handed to you by 17 points in the last election? Crazy. Now, the reason I don't like him are many and sundry, but one of them is the fact that when his wife gave birth to a stillborn baby. I believe that's what happened. Rick wrapped it up and took it home, this little corpse, for his children to hold and pass around among them. This dead, actually never been alive, delivered fetus. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that is sick. Now, some people say, no, Mike, that's perfect, man, that's perfect. You know, familiarizes the children with death. No, if you want to familiarize your children with death, take them for a walk in the woods where they see dead rabbits and dead birds and, you know, so on and so forth. But to bring home a little dead baby for the children to pass around and talk to, pray over? What the hell is that? What is that? What? I mean, unless I'm misreading this, what kind of a father would bring, and mother would bring home a corpse for the children to handle or pass around? Or what is that? Is that a part of Catholic Christianity that completely blew past me, even though I was brought up in a Catholic Christian neighborhood, surrounded by Catholic Christians and a few Jews, very few Protestants. But that's the reason I think Rick Santorum is a real nutcase. I mean, seriously. It's one thing to go through a full-term pregnancy, I'm sure. I don't know, because I'll never go through one, and then deliver a stillborn fetus. But it's something else again to then wrap that fetus up and take it home for your living children to talk to or see. I don't get that. I don't understand what he was trying to say to his kids. I mean, what is that? I wish somebody would send me an email and just tell me. I cannot imagine under any circumstances over the course of my reproductive life of having done that. And I'm just wondering, what was the motivation to make that happen? I'm lost, man. We'll be right back.
Talk radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
He's on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass.
It's about nine before the hour. The lunatics are in the hall. Santorum, he believes strongly in what he calls the culture of life, except when it's blowing the life out of people in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever capitalist America decides to unleash its airborne hell. Then, of course, Santorum immediately becomes in favor of the culture of death, even though he wouldn't call it that. He believes in American exceptionalism, you see, as American exceptionalism had its run in the 20th century. It's over. This is not the American century, Rick. It just isn't. Nobody knows whose century it is. It may not be anyone's, but it damn sure isn't America's century. Oh, you must hate America, Mike Malloy. Culture of life. His big deals are he's against abortion and same-sex marriage. Oh, of course. He is against the forming of a contract between two adults. Let's call it what it is. In other words, he believes that government should interfere when two people want to make a contract. Two adults want to make a contract. They don't have to go into your pedophile church, Rick, to have that contract sanctified by some pedophilic priest who has been hidden by the church hierarchy in plain sight, like forever. Rick Santorum against same-sex marriage and belongs to a cult that has for decades, if not centuries, protected pedophilic priests. Vicious, violent, child-abusing, child-raping priests. And Rick Santorum, who is a member of that cult, is against same-sex marriage. Or, more rationally, two adults making a contract together that involves some of the things that Rick Santorum does with his old lady. You know, paying the bills together, visiting each other if they have to go to the hospital, sharing insurance payment, you know, just normal contractual stuff. But Rick Santorum, who belongs to a pedophilic cult, will have none of that. Oh, he says he also has interests that include national security, foreign policy, and entitlement programs. Entitlement. That would be as in, I'm entitled to it! But really what it is Social Security that everyone pays into, Medicare that everyone pays into, Medicaid that everyone pays into. Don't they? Does everybody pay into Medicaid one way or another? Entitlement, my ass. He says to the Times, I have one major piece of legislation I passed on partial birth abortion. Partial birth abortion. Yeah, that happens a lot. You know how that happens? A woman will get to 8.5 or 9 months into her term and wake up one morning and say, you know what? I changed my mind. Get this thing out of me. Right, Rick? You know what? I've decided after carrying this fetus for almost 9 months now and, you know, fixing up the spare bedroom and knowing it's going to be a girl because we've had sonograms and everything, and my husband is just happy as hell. But you know what? Kill the goddamn thing. I don't want it. Right, Rick? These kinds of abortions are almost invariably done because there is some horrendous problem that is developing with this late-term pregnancy. It is a terrible situation, and this pig, this man who belongs to a child-raping cult religion, has the audacity to make it sound as though a woman, 8, 9 months pregnant, just out of the clear blue says, you know, I think I'm going to murder this thing inside of me. This guy wants to be president. Oh, he had, he says he had two others pieces of legislation never passed. The Syria Accountability Act and the Iran Freedom and Support Act. Both of which were opposed by the Bush crime family. Yeah. He also added, I spent the last 4 years at the Ethics and Policy Public Policy Center giving lectures all over the country on radical jihadism and the gathering storm of the 21st century. I haven't done squat on moral or cultural issues. Radical jihadism. Partial birth abortion, which is a misnomer. Gee, Rick, you're just up front working for the betterment of the American people, aren't you? 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. Our phone lines are open if you'd like to call in. 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556 is the number. Email from Fred. If not Anthony Weiner, who? He writes, as I look over that gaggle of craven so-called Democrats in the House of Representatives, the sole gutsy champion of his constituents always has been Anthony Weiner. The rest of them are partly or entirely in the thrall of big corporate money. Like Senator Bernie Sanders, he is totally unfettered by the influences of those who would bring down our country. Anthony Weiner is one of the most courageous members that Congress has been privileged to have in this generation. He should not resign. We sorely need him. Fred and his last name in Huffsneck, Massachusetts. Or is that Housneck? Huffsneck. Yeah, a lot of the these cheesy cable television programs are running online polls. You know, they put it out there, honest to God, and then you're supposed to tweet the host, should Anthony Weiner resign? Yes, no. Oh, God have mercy. Mercy, mercy. The whole thing put out there by an underwear sniffer, Andrew Breitbart, who never has let a crotch pass by that didn't intrigue him as long as it was somehow related to a Democrat. He's such a scummy person. And then the idiotic move on Andrew Weiner's part. Fred, and his last name, you know, you may be right about Weiner, and I don't disagree. Some of his, I mean, he stands, that speech, or that enraged, speech that he was giving in the House of Representatives, where he turned to the other, to the Republicans, said, no, I'll not yield, sit down and shut your goddamn mouth. It was just incredible. I disagree with Weiner on that old bugaboo. The Middle East, Weiner is a dyed-in-the-wool Zionist, and to him, no mercy for Palestinians, even though I believe his wife is Muslim. It doesn't make any difference where it concerns the state of Israel. This is the part that just drives me crazy with these guys. Drives me crazy. But so what? Doesn't make any difference. What else we got here? I'm looking at some of these emails. Let's see. From Reg regarding Santorum. Insanity, Mike. Sheer insanity. A prerequisite for GOP membership. Insanity. Yeah, sociopathology for sure, which I guess is, same thing. And Captain Mary in Memphis writes, she writes, he said he brought home the dead fetus for his kids to kiss and sing to. The kids were under age 9 at the time. Later, he made lots of money on a book called Letters to Gabriel. It was a collection of letters that he'd written to the dead fetus. Sicky Ricky Santorum, a real nutcase. Signed, Cat Mary in Memphis, who had sane parents. Is that what he did? To kiss it and sing to it? Oh, my Christ almighty. I knew they passed it around, this corpse, but I had no idea. Seriously, does that not result in deranged children?
Well, didn't he also, this is something I read in an interview, that he had a picture of him holding the dead baby on his desk. I mean, not holding it on his desk, a picture on his desk framed of him right. holding the dead baby.
Right.
And when someone asked about it, he pointed to it and said, that's my little guy right there. And it was, you know... what it was.
You know, I certainly have no idea of what children under nine, how they process holding a corpse, a little baby corpse. Maybe they process it just fine. Maybe it's just like holding a dead rabbit or a dead squirrel. Maybe it just doesn't mean anything. But on the other hand, I guess one of the problems I'm having here is thinking about children who are brought up specifically and deliberately and pointedly in the Catholic religion, especially now that the truth has been made so evident around the globe that pedophiles were attracted to the priesthood in much the same way flies buzz around a pile of dog droppings. And these men were attracted to the priesthood not to put themselves in the service of their personal savior, not to put themselves in the service of the Catholic Church, but to fulfill their retarded or delayed sexuality by molesting children. And then the determination by the Catholic hierarchy to cover it up, all the way up to the guy who is now Pope. I mean, everybody covered it up. The lives of the children, those people that Jesus said should be suffered unto him, for such is the kingdom of God, those are the ones the Catholic Church attacked. Endlessly attacked them over and over and over again. Viciously, violently attacked children for decades, for centuries. And nobody did anything. How can anyone remain a Catholic? If you want to worship Jesus Christ and practice some of the sacraments laid out by the Catholic Church, can you not do it on your own? Is there something written down that says you have to take yourself into a little cubicle where the person behind the screen may be someone who's a serial child molester and confess your sins? Confess your bad thoughts? What? Of course, what I say about Catholicism or Christianity in general is meaningless, since I see the whole thing as a sick scam. But Santorum, I mean, to have done that to children, his own children, Jesus. Necrophile. All right, we momentarily have a break coming here. Regarding the early voting thing, Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2, writes, in Wisconsin, not only do they have early voting, but they also have late voting, where ballots can be accumulated for up to 3 days after the polls are closed, but only in Republican districts. This is a time-consuming business that makes it impossible for hardworking Republican poll workers to keep the tamper-proof seals on the ballot bags. Ooh, I'll just bet. We'll be right back.
I'm a Roman Catholic, and have been since before I was born. And the one thing they say about Catholics is they'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a six-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on your every sperm is sacred.
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
You're damn right. 21 past the hour. Sarah is calling from Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I am a frontline activist who does political satire, and I do a lot of it on my answering machine. So if you were to call me today, this is what you would hear, which is, thanks for calling Sarah and the Bad Luck 13 report, subject to change at the drop of a hat. There's this thing about threes. We've got the Quinton three. Knit with an itch, scratched himself. Trumpy dumptied and combed himself out. Dan Huxterby returned God's call. There's unfit Romney, who finds Ron appalling, who thinks Sarah Palin, who wants to take a slice out of Pizza King blacker than Obama, quote-unquote. Herman, is it? Who is less known than Gary Johnson, or is it Johnny Garrison, who wants plenty of nothing, who wants to send Rick to the sanatorium? We still have Miss Empty Shell as the sole distaff candidate, who is glad to know John Hunt's man, but not women. So if you leave your name, number, and a good time to call, I'll get back to you before the anointed three so far, hear God's final answer.
I'm dizzy.
If you like it, I change the message every week, and
yeah, but
I
you don't dare give out your phone number.
No, I can leave it with your screener if you like, and you can always call it up and see if it's worth listening to again.
Sure.
Great. I'd be happy to do it.
Well,
because we need some serious humor here.
We do. It's getting to the point where there's nothing funny any longer unless you want to get into things that are very, very dark humor, which a lot of people don't appreciate, and even more people don't understand.
And you're going to have some fun playing with our friend, Mr. Well, it doesn't really matter how you look at it. Wiener, for an obvious reason, and as things get darker for him, I suspect we'll start calling him Wiener.
That's a shame, too. Anthony Wiener kind of took careful aim and shot himself in one of his body parts. And it was so unnecessary. I don't know what's wrong with these people. I really don't. Hey, Sarah, thanks. I'll put you on hold, and Kathy will get the phone number, and we just may call. Yeah, the whole Anthony, you know, I don't want to talk about it, but when you think about, here's this huge focus on this issue today. I think the network news programs led with the story. Cable news, they were like rats on a corpse. They just couldn't stop. And MSNBC, I think, devoted its entire programming today, from the time Wiener had his press conference up until the present moment, to this absolutely ridiculous story. I don't get this. I mean, I've lived through McCarthyism. I've lived through Vietnam. I've lived through Watergate. I've watched reporters who were still around and active when I was starting to become aware of how important they were, like Edward R. Murrow or Eric Severide or Huntley Brinkley or Cronkite. And with the exception of a few, like Seymour Hersh or, who's the guy at Consortium? Robert Perry. Some of the Nation reporters, some of the Daily Coast diarists, some of the people that are picked up by Op-Ed News, some of the people that write at TVNewsLies.com. You notice what I'm doing here. These are, for the most part, these are people online. I'm not saying that there aren't some super journalists who still work in what's left of print, the print medium in this country. But my God, the television people have just turned into ravenous. They're like pigs. I mean, ravenous pigs who descend on something dead and just start eating at it. Just over and over and over again. What is wrong with these people? The only profession that has First Amendment acknowledgement, if not protection, and they're going to focus on a photograph that this juvenile, in this regard, of course he's juvenile, Anthony Weiner, put out there for the underwear sniffer Andrew Breitbart to find. Andrew Breitbart will always find anything that has to do with underwear. He is an underwear sniffer. This is what Breitbart does.
Speakers, it'll be our secret.
I was 25 before the hour.
Faded dreams from yesterday. Like a brush.
Another thing that is very disturbing to me about the Anthony Weiner thing, and this has nothing to do with Anthony Weiner, has to do with Nancy Pelosi. You know, we went through 8 years of this country being run by a criminal enterprise, by a presidency that violated the principles set down at Nuremberg, that resulted in German officers and civilians being hanged. Also, a criminal enterprise that totally ignored, spat upon the Geneva Conventions on the conduct of not just war, but how prisoners are treated. An organization that instituted torture as official U.S. policy. A president and a vice president that destroyed the economy of the United States. Jesus Christ Almighty. And yet Nancy Pelosi had the gall to say that impeachment was off the table. Not even an investigation. And now she's calling for an investigation of Anthony Weiner? And some of you people still don't understand why, to me, the Democratic Party is a nest of vipers, and I want nothing to do with it. Nothing. I will vote a candidate who might or might not have a D after his or her name. But as far as being a Democrat, I have removed that label. And I don't like the sound of I'm an independent voter. What the hell does that mean? I remain a voter, even though I know that the system, especially here in Georgia, is a farce. a joke, totally corrupted by the Republican murder machine that now runs this state. But I'll continue to walk through the motions of casting a vote in every election in which I am eligible to vote, even though I know that my vote has a very good chance, better than even chance, of being either converted into a vote for Republicans or eliminated altogether. But as far as Democrats are concerned, no thanks. But Nancy Pelosi's refusal to even allow the House Judiciary Committee to conduct an inquiry to find out whether or not there was sufficient cause to begin impeachment hearings. That's what impeachment hearings are all about. They are to decide whether or not the conduct of the person being impeached rises to that level. That's all. It doesn't mean conviction. That's up to the Senate. But not even an inquiry, an investigation. It is the same as if in your city there was someone on the loose who was a mass murderer, killing at random, men, women, children, a mass murderer. And they finally arrested someone. And there was mounds of evidence linking this person to the string of murders. And a decision was made not to have a grand jury listen to the evidence and decide whether or not to indict this person. And that decision was made by your city or your county or your state's prosecutor, who said, no, we're not going to present any evidence to the grand jury whatsoever. We have prima facie evidence that this person is the murderer. But we've decided not to present that evidence to the grand jury. So we're releasing him. That's what Nancy Pelosi did. She had 8 years of evidence of the criminality of the Bush crime family. 8 years of it. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of corpses, dead people. From the Middle East to South Asia. Corpses upon corpses. Shattered lives. American, Iraqi, Iranian, Palestinian, Pakistani, Afghan. 8 years of that. Nancy Pelosi couldn't wait till the goddamn sun set. On the day that Anthony Weiner said, yeah, okay, before she has suggested that an investigation is in order about Anthony Weiner's juvenile trick of sending pictures of his body or his underwear to someone or several someones. And this filthy media that we have, this disgusting goddamn television media, has been on this all day like white on rice. And Rick Santorum has the audacity, and other candidates do, to talk about American exceptionalism? What? What? Roger is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hello, Roger.
Hi, Mike. Actually, I will come to the point which I told Kathy. But since you mentioned about Bush economy meltdown, right now there is a report about the housing done by the Harvard University. They're saying that the house, no new homes are being built now.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of, it has gone down so much, it is the same as what was the lowest level, which was just after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the amount of new homes, if at all they are built, because there is a flood from the...
The bank foreclosures.
So there is no need for new homes. So because of that, no jobs for carpenters and all those people who work on the construction. So this also affects the commercial building of market, because there is no need for restaurant or which all goes with the new housing complex, you know.
Right.
So you don't need all that.
Right.
So this is what this Bush has done. So unless this housing crisis is comes out of that, that will take at least 20 years. The other picture of the economy is not going to change at all.
Well, so, listen, Roger, let's keep in mind that the door to that was opened by Bill Clinton. When Clinton signed off on the end of what was titled the Glass-Steagall Act, from way back in the 30s, that separated investment houses from the banking industry. And once Bill Clinton signed off on that, forced by Republicans, but he could have vetoed it. But you can still see the video of Bill Clinton signing that legislation that ended Glass-Steagall, and you can see the smile on his face, and he kind of slaps the pen down on the table, and he looks around at the people, the senators or whoever they were gathered behind him, and he's talking about, okay, it's time to stop this antiquated crap and move on, I'm paraphrasing, of course, move on into the modern era of banking and finance. So, yeah, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney are responsible for criminal acts, but it was Bill Clinton who opened the door for this meltdown. Clinton should have known that the business he was deregulating was filled to the brim with liars, cheats, thieves. I'm talking about these bankers and international bankers. They don't give a damn about who suffers. I mean, all Clinton had to do was look back in the 80s at what happened with the SNL meltdown. So the acts that the Cheney-Bush crime family committed were acts of criminal acts. What Bill Clinton did was open the door so that the crooks could make billions. Roger, thanks, man. Appreciate your call.
Here we go now. Keep it low brow. Get stupid. Why? 'Cause I know how. Check my brain in. Be an idiot. Act lame in. Stay ignorant. Be remedial. Wear the dust cap. Slouch over and cool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things. Shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down.
Hey, me.
Your call. Sanchez is in East L.A., where he always is, listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
From the mighty hills of Hollywood to the golden dinosaurs, I wish you the very best of good evening, senor.
To the golden dinosaurs?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, Sanchez.
Hello. I want to pick up exactly where you, right before you took the call from Roger, and shout out to Roger, that I want to put this up a notch. And actually, this question belongs to Tim from Los Angeles because I saw it on his Facebook page, where I want to ratchet it up. We were over the weekend here seeing live television coverage of Ratko. I'm forgetting his last name here. You know who I'm
Mladic?
Talking about. Yes, thank you so much.
Sure.
And we were seeing coverage of his trial, or the hearing phase of his trial, all over the cable news over the weekend here. Mm-hmm. Now, the question that Tim from Los Angeles posed is, well, if we could get Ratko into the world court, what about Dick Cheney and George Bush?
Yeah, what about them?
Yeah. So what is the inequality here? I mean, they basically, on television, admitted that they were allowing torture to happen, and all types of other things can be brought up, about. So not only is it Nancy Pelosi, but it's the world court as well. So, you know.
Well, do you think maybe the reason is because there's, as George Wallace, that old racist from the South, said 40 years ago, there's not a dime's worth of difference between these two political parties. There may be some difference in a few of the members. And the Republicans may want fascism to come here quicker than the Democrats. But if there was a difference between the two parties, don't you think we would know it by now? There used to be vast differences between the Democrats and the Republicans. But can you think of one, Sanchez? Tell me the difference between Democrats and Republicans on a national level.
One has a letter in the alphabet that comes before the other, which is far further along in the alphabet. I really honestly can't. You know how far I go back with you. I mean, I wish people would go back into your podcast and listen to some of your predictions even before Obama got into office, probably about April or so, which is a good point here because I want to transition to what I called in about. That August of 2008. Not only were we discussing that Obama and Hillary Clinton were both centrist and corporatists, and what were we would keep our fingers crossed. I think you said at one point, and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. I know you said hope for the best, but what were we to expect? So I'm not surprised. Quite frankly, I am not. The thing that I'm concerned about more than anything is a couple of minutes ago, man, you were mentioning Seymour Hersh. Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance to read his latest New Yorker article?
No, I have not, but we just resubscribed to New Yorker, so hopefully it'll get here in time for me to see that.
If I can give you just a quick little summary here, because he was actually, it was one of the things that...
If it's very quick.
Well, it's basically that the U.S. is ratcheting up and trying to once again cherry-pick evidence in order to attack Iran, probably at the behest of Israel. So this was covered again on Democracy Now! This morning with Amy Goodman, and Seymour was actually a guest on the program. And basically, again, the International Atomic Energy Commission is basically saying, again, there's no evidence. Yes, they're developing the nuclear power for peaceful purposes, but you got to think at this point with what happened to Fukushima in Japan, who would even want to be developing nuclear power? But that's the Iranians' problem. But nevertheless, Hersh is extremely concerned by the fact that by hook or crook, either by Israel or by the U.S., that's what's going to be happening. So I think I'm going to start looking at Debka file again on a regular basis to see what's going on, because you'll recall, again, back in August of 2008, we almost went to war with Iran.
Well, you know, the former intelligence chief of Mossad, Israel's spy agency, his name is Meir Dagan. He stepped down after 8 years in that post, and he's made some very unusual public statements in recent weeks. A few weeks ago, he's the guy who said that a military attack on Iran would be a stupid idea. And I think it was last week, speaking at Tel Aviv University, he said that attacking Iran, quote, would mean regional war, and in that case, you would have given Iran the best possible reason to continue their nuclear program. Then he added the regional challenge that Israel would face would be impossible, end quote. Now, he also said that Israel's top leaders lack judgment, and that the anticipated pressure of international isolation as on Israel as the Palestinian campaign for statehood develops could lead Netanyahu and the rest of these sociopaths to rash decisions like what you're talking about, an airstrike on Iran. So it's not just a herd of anti-Semites who are being very critical of Israel right now. It is, you know, the former 8 years he was the head of Mossad, for God's sake. If anybody understands the behind the scenes activity, not just of the Likud government, but also of what they're cooking up and what the possible results could be, it would be this guy.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be some half-witted jackass in American Congress who, when Netanyahu gives a speech here, these yo-yos jump up and down out of their seats every time he says something warlike.
Right.
It would be Meyer Dagan.
Well, as many countries as NATO has been involved with at this point in the Middle East and in that region, wouldn't you consider it World War III?
It would be that. Sanchez, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Well, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
The IRS.